The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
This is case 91 from the Blue Cliff Record. Yang Yuan's rhinoceros fan. One day, Yang Yuan called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." The attendant said, "It's broken." Yang Yuan said, "If the fan is broken, bring back the rhinoceros." The attendant did not answer. Later, Tozi said, "I wouldn't mind bringing back that rhinoceros, but probably its head and horns would not be complete." Shui Do, "I want to see the incomplete head and horns." Shi Shuang said, "If I brought it back to you, nothing would remain for me." Shui Do, "That rhinoceros still exists." Zifu drew a circle and wrote the ideograph ox in it. Shui Do, "Well done. Why didn't you bring it out sooner?" Bao Fu, on behalf of the attendant, said, "Master, you're too venerable. The task you set is too hard for me. Let someone else do that job for me." Shui Do, "All efforts have proved fruitless." So what a wonderful way to end this story. All efforts have proved fruitless. And what a wonderful practice point for us. All efforts that we make during this sesshin, all these efforts will prove fruitless. Let's be grateful for that. But who's this guy Shui Do, and what's he doing in this koan, in this story that took place a few centuries earlier? Maybe just laying out a little bit what this play of voices is, where all this is coming from. So we start with this, the base story, which happened in the late 8th or early 9th century. Yang Yuan was one of these earlier teachers. He was a student of the great teacher Matsu, whose words we read together during the sutra service. And Yang Yuan apparently had this a really cool fan that had a handle made from rhinoceros horn. Must have been quite a valuable and exotic and special object. And so one day he asks his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." And the attendant says, "It is broken." So notice what Yang Yuan does not say next. He doesn't say, "How did it get broken?" Or, "Who broke it?" Or, "Where are we ever going to find another rhinoceros fan? They must have been pretty rare." But he says, "If the fan is broken, bring back the rhinoceros." So here's a second great practice point for us. This is our task at this sesshin, to bring back the rhinoceros, to bring out the rhinoceros. Makes no sense, which is one of the advantages of this story and probably why it got handed down. Our rational minds are so useful. They got us so far. They help us so much at work and at school. But they don't help us with the great matter. They don't help us to take in the Dharma. We need to access our greater heart mind and parts of it that we may have never used or may have forgotten how to use. And these stories, these seemingly weird, irrational, wild teaching stories, are prized and became handed down precisely because they invite us to access this larger mind, this not excluding the rational mind, it includes it, but it's so much vaster. So this story gets handed down orally. That's the story. People were quite struck with this. It got handed down orally. People would say something like, "Did you hear the one about Yang Yuan and the rhinoceros fan? Well, let me tell you." And then later teachers were struck by it and sometimes added their own comment. So later, Tozi said, so this is a later teacher, I wouldn't mind bringing that rhinoceros, but probably its head and horns would not be complete. And so this gets added to the story. A few of these comments are memorable enough that they get passed along with the core story. And then Shishuang later, if I brought it back to you, nothing would remain for me. And then Zifu draws the circle and writes the ideograph for ox or for rhinoceros inside it. And then finally Bao Fu says, in the voice of the attendant. All of these teachers are imagining what would they have said. Master, you're too venerable. The task you set's too hard for me. Let someone else do that job for me. And then finally, Zhui Do comes in. He gathers 100 of these stories, that some of which, maybe all of which, have been written down by then. Now we're in the early 11th century, so this is several centuries later. And Zhui Do makes a book, not yet called The Blue Cliff Record, but he writes verses for all of these. And his book is called something like Verses for 100 Old Stories. And Zhui Do can't help adding his own little comments. And they're beautifully arch, and they're beautifully to the point. And so we get the entire koan the way we have it now, the way I read it to you. But we're not done yet, because then another teacher, a little later in the 11th century, Yuan Wu, takes Zhui Do's collection of 100 teaching stories, 100 koans, and adds introductions and commentaries, and makes the collection that we call the Blue Cliff Record, that he called the Blue Cliff Record. And I'm not going to read you those additional materials, but maybe you'll hear about some of them from Melissa or Paul. Paul will speak to you about this koan after me today, and Melissa Roshi will talk to us about it tomorrow. And so all of us living teachers, we try to pick it up and play with it as well. And again, all these efforts will prove fruitless. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're pointless or that they're a waste of time. Maybe it's not so bad for these efforts to be fruitless. That's something for you all to take under advisement as we talk a bit more about this koan together. So Yang Yuan called to his attendant, bring me the rhinoceros fan. The attendant said, it is broken. Yang Yuan said, if the fan is broken, bring back the rhinoceros. So what do we do faced with this? How do we react to this seemingly impossible demand? How would you, and I'm speaking now to each one of you, how would you bring forth this rhinoceros? I might say, what is your rhinoceros? Or where is this rhinoceros for you right now? Is it just a word in a story? Is it some threatened animal in Africa? What all could this rhinoceros be for you? This is what the koan begins with. This is the provocation that sets everything else in motion. And then we notice the attendant did not answer. That's the end of the core story. The attendant is silent. Is this a problem? Or is this a legitimate response? That's something else that we all take under advisement. What do we make of the attendant's silence? It's easy, right, to look down on the attendant. He's an attendant after all. But we're not so sure, because being a teacher's attendant can be quite a privileged job. You get lots of time with the teacher. So maybe the attendant isn't so foolish. Maybe he is. We're not sure. And I love this challenge. Okay, no rhinoceros fan, then bring me the rhinoceros. I found that this koan was bringing up a different koan that's also in the Blue Cliff Record. It was bringing it up for me, which is about another teacher and another attendant. and this teacher is Zhuzhir. And Zhuzhir teaches without words, and he's not unique in this. This is part of the tradition that Matsu handed down. There's teaching with words and teaching without words, and so a teacher might raise a fan or thump the floor with a teaching stick, or brandish a fist, or in Zhuzhir's case, raise one finger. And it's become a cliche, and for good reason. Clichés sometimes happen because they're true. It's become a cliche that Zen teachers don't want you to mistake the finger pointing at the moon for the moon. And so Zhuzhir literally holds up a finger, but is pointing to something beyond it. And Zhuzhir's attendant, who in this case is kind of foolish, Zhuzhir's attendant doesn't see that. Zhuzhir's attendant thinks that it's the finger, because when people ask him about his master's teaching, he raises one finger and then looks very profound and subtle. And this happens enough that it reaches Zhuzhir's ears, and Zhuzhir takes away the finger. And then the attendant has a realization. And so we take away the rhinoceros fan, and this gives us a chance to produce the rhinoceros, not the fan, but bring back the rhinoceros. I don't want to say a lot about each of these later comments, but just to remind you of them. And so each of these later teachers has a different approach, and this makes this quite a lively koan. Gives us lots and lots of possible entry points. Maybe one of them will speak especially to you. Maybe some of them won't at all. So Tozi says, well, I wouldn't mind bringing that rhinoceros, but probably its head and horns would not be complete. Now, what does that mean? That we could bring back the rhinoceros, but it wouldn't be whole. We couldn't bring back all the rhinoceros. What would be missing? Maybe that reminds you of another koan or two. And then Zhui Do's comment, I want to see the incomplete head and horns. Zhui Do seems to be in a hurry to let us know, this isn't really a problem, is it? I'd like to see the incomplete head and horns. Shi Shuang, still another teacher back in the day, says, well, if I brought it back to you, nothing would remain for me. How could that be? How could it be that only one person can have this rhinoceros at a time? If I gave it to you, it wouldn't be there for me. And Zhui Do again reassures us that rhinoceros still exists. That maybe could be the theme for our retreat. That rhinoceros still exists. Keep this in mind. Zifu has still a different approach. He comes from a tradition where diagrams are used and calligraphy. And so he draws a circle. Maybe he draws it in the dust on the ground. Maybe he draws it in the air and puts an ideograph in it that some translators translate as ox and some as rhinoceros. Maybe these were the same word in ancient Chinese. I don't know. And Zhui Do again approves, well done. Why didn't you bring it out sooner? And then Bao Fu, speaking in the attendant's voice. You could say they're all speaking for the attendant. Master, you're too venerable. The task you set is too hard for me. Let someone else do that job for me. Is that a good response? Is it inadequate? Is it purposely inadequate? Is it an invitation to you and me? Are we that other person to do the job? I love the way that this koan leaves so much open and leaves so much open specifically for us here in the present. We're adding ourselves to this chain that we see building from the ancients, from the ancient Chinese, through in the Tang Dynasty, through the 11th century and the Sung Dynasty to us and to all of the teachers in between us and them. We can find other commentaries for this. But we don't want to just immerse ourselves in what other people have said. We want to encounter this directly. We want to take it into our own heart minds. We want to eat with this and sleep with this, drink tea with it, walk with it, sit with it. This is the invitation. This is part of the Sesshin. Even if you're working on another koan separately, I'm inviting you to let this one work with you and on you as you work with it and on it. And keeping in mind that final comment by Xue Do, I hope that all my efforts just now have proved fruitless. What about you, Paul?
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate the way you opened it up, Alan. This koan, these ancestors, they are alive. Yes, they may have been born and lived in the 9th to 11th century in ancient China, and they are still alive. I offer this evidence for you. We are all here. These teachings, as Alan is pointing out, really are invitational. They're calling to us. They're inviting us to come forward. I enjoy this particular koan because of all of the added comments. The added comments by teachers over the centuries. And as I saw it, Alan so astutely pointed out, there's still space. At the end of this list, there's room for one more. And there's actually always room for one more. Who is that space left for? Last night, our Jiki, as far as Lara, was talking about Kinhin, giving us a little teisho within itself. This aspect that that we come together, that we practice alone together, and this serpent, this chain that is created in Kinhin specifically, but always here. Maybe just a little bit more visceral and visible in Kinhin. This is the chain that I believe that this koan is pointing to. Watch out to a discursive mind that may take us to that to this mindset of, but I'm not worthy. How can I add my name to the list? Watch this discursive mind in the sense of, I would say this, I would say that, which can be lovely for it to arise, and then get that checked out. This invitation is not static. That as far as Yan Yuan has really called to all of us. Yes, he called to his attendant, but he is calling to all of us in these later teachers heard and step forward. The temptation may be to see which one of those are right or which one of those are wrong. And it goes far beyond that. I liked Alan's encouragement to look at these comments, including Zuido's commentary, that maybe tug at each of us. It's a way in, as Alan was saying, and it's a way of opening to the fact that we're already in this list. These ancestors are truly alive. I was struck as Alan was talking about a Shinryu Suzuki quote just read not too long ago. I take it as a warning and also as an encouragement that we write down the words of our ancestors in a book, and we put that book on a shelf, and it stays on the shelf. That's not what this koan is doing. That's not what Alan was inviting us to do. That these ancestors are alive and they are sitting right in your seat. Take them with you. Know that they are with you wherever you go. This is why there is always one spot at the bottom of this list. Always one spot on the bottom of this list. One day, Yan Yuan called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fang." The attendant said, "It is broken." Yan Yuan said, "If the fang is broken, bring back the rhinoceros." The attendant did not answer. Later, Chouzi said, "I wouldn't mind bringing that rhinoceros, but probably its head and horns would not be complete." Zuido said, "I want to see the incomplete head and horns." Shixuan said, If I brought it back to you, nothing would remain for me." Zuido, "That rhinoceros still exists." Zifu drew a circle and wrote the ideograph "ox" in it. Zuido said, "Well done. Why didn't you bring it out sooner?" Bao Fu, on behalf of the attendant, said, "Master, you are too venerable. The task you set is too hard for me. Let someone else do that job for me." Zuido said, "All efforts have proved fruitless. Thank you." And please, sit comfortably. We're in the process of moving into our Dharma dialogue, and I love it. You're already forming that that loop at the other end. And maybe even looking around. You want to make sure that you can see everybody's faces, so maybe little adjustments here. Yeah, thank you, Ryan. And so here's the invitation. The invitation has been sent. This is an opportunity for each of us to come forward. I will call on folks, and Melissa and Alan will join in responding. Yeah, Rich.
Very entertaining koan. I have no idea what it means except for the very end. All attempts are futile. I forget what came before that, but that whatever came before it. So just today I was gung-ho, I was really excited, and I practiced my Oryoki at home. And the first part went great, and then it went downhill from there. And then I practiced just the chanting and
yep, right
before she says it, and of course so it's like all attempts are futile.
Actually, the line, the translation is fruitless.
Fruitless, not futile.
No fruit.
No fruit.
No.
Poison.
And it's really wonderful to look into what we want the fruit to be.
Right.
So I'm going to do Orioki perfectly. I'm going to do playing the Mukokyo perfectly. Well, then what?
Right.
What, are you going to get a lot of praise? Is everybody going to think something about you?
Mm.
You can see how the ego self comes in. I'm going to be good at this. And that may be the very thing that gets in the way. Prioritizing the fruit over what's happening right then.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then telling yourself a story.
Right.
Well, it started like this. And then
right.
Like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
And then, oh, jeez. Just drop it, right?
Yeah.
But we can't. We
right.
can't drop it. So instead, notice. And this is, I think, I love that Alan really directed us towards this point. You know, this was the one that really spoke to you. And in hearing you talk, it spoke to me too. This is what happens in a Dharma talk. The teachers just give forth what we're working with, which is what all human beings work with. And I think everybody in this room has these delusive ideas about a future that would look like this. And then when it doesn't match, because it never matches, then we start making up that story. So just to open to what is your fruit, right? And what is the story I keep telling myself?
Right.
And then see what happens.
I'm on it.
And I also want to, just praise you for showing up in this aspect. I mean, you could have been at home and waited till you had the Orioki just, perfect. Think like, I've got this. And now I can go to Sushi.
Mm.
And that's not what this koan is asking. It's asking, show up. Bix. Yes.
one thing I love about some koans is like when they really sort of chop down like all of it. Like they give several different possibilities that of an answer that are all contradictory and and sort of just leave me stuck. Like, no, not that. Okay. I guess I'm just going to sit here.
Yeah, so this larger mind collides with our rational mind. And our rational mind says two contradictory things can't be true. But is that true?
And how many contradictory things are in this poem?
I know. This,
8 or 10? I don't know.
And there's part of me that says, I don't think there's anything contradictory in this koan.
I'm like sitting with this feeling of making a big mistake. And I'm so close to the teachers and I keep looking at their sticks, like thinking, can't you just like hit me with your stick? Can't we go back to the old ways? And I'm like thinking that is that because I don't want to just sit with feeling like I made a mistake? Like I'd rather, I don't know. Like it's almost like I'd rather just throw away the rhinoceros fan. I don't even want to sit with the rhinoceros. Like, and I guess that's just what's alive for me.
So, Laura, be careful what you wish for. The stick is in our hands.
I didn't bring my stick. I forgot it. And I'll have it tomorrow. It's a really big stick. It's the prettiest stick that I got from David. And it just makes me remember a story I kept hearing when I was a young student about an old teacher who couldn't even hit with his stick anymore, so he'd just take his slipper.
Oh.
Just, I feel like doing that.
Yeah.
But the great thing about being teachers is we don't have to do that because it's part of the story. Right? We're telling you, just like Rich, you're telling a story about yourself. Oh my God. the stories. And just to watch how they evolve too. We sometimes think that we should get rid of the story. You know, let me just stop this. You know, no more thinking. I'm gonna stop it. But it's so deep. The roots are so deep. So to really follow the roots all the way down is part of what we practice too. And then they release. We say they're self-releasing. We don't have to do very much.
And interestingly, Laura, it was Matsu, right, Yang Yuan's teacher, who brought sticks and shouts into Zen practice. And, you know, why did he do that? You know, here's another way of taking away the fan, of taking away the finger, trying to be more direct. We don't do that anymore because we don't live in a culture where hitting people is okay. But we can see why they did, you know, and the compassion behind what sounds to us like a kind of not very nice act.
Yeah.
I loved it when you said... he took away the finger. Anybody who's heard that story, he takes a knife and cuts the kid's finger off. It's a young boy. But I think the taking away is the reality. The way it feels to us is like it's been cut. And that's where that koan has so much resonance. You're doing a great job abusing yourself. We just can go,
All my own sticks.
Exactly.
Sometimes the ancestors will say, I spare you 30 blows. And in this particular case, you know, you've already given them. So yeah, really right where you need to be. So want to throw this rhinoceros away? Really? Try that. Yeah, see.
When I first heard rhinoceros fan, like, I was picturing like a rhinoceros that you plug in.
Modern ancestors.
It's the 9th century. I don't think they were plugging in anything. And then, okay, so what is the rhinoceros? And then, it's this kind of fan. Anyway, it was just like how you, you know, just like to try to relate to the rhinoceros and the head and... it was just amusing to me how I saw it. And
So amusement.
Where is the rhinoceros?
yeah, there you go. But amusement gets you in, you know. And I think this is it. You know, some of these. I was talking with someone the other day. It was not a joke. So talking with someone the other day. You know, some koans they're just memorable, and they just have a stickiness to it. And this is one of them for me. And maybe it is for you because that amusement allows it. And I think this is what this aspect of bringing them alive, seeing that they're already alive. And so yeah, amusement. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I think there was.
I think Paige.
Please.
I really liked as well what you mentioned about the part at the end of the con of. All efforts will be fruitless. when you said that, I was like, ah. Because for the past like few hours, I've been like, and then I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and you know, interesting enough, it doesn't mean don't expend efforts. It just means don't expect them to do certain things. Yeah, and so we put a lot of effort forward in these retreats together. They're not easy for anybody. And yet, we don't expect that the greater effort will bring us the greater gain. That again, is our, you know, rational way of thinking and our capitalist way of thinking. You know, getting away from all that, and yet still doing our best, giving 100%.
And that I loved what you did. I can't really see that well. The you made this motion, right? My mind. That's what. Is that accurate? Yeah. And don't dismiss that, please. Mm-hmm. What a gift to see your own mind. Mm-hmm. Very few people get to do that. That's one of the gifts of Zen practice. There's nothing else to do. And you're sleepy and your mind is just spinning and all this stuff's going on. Thank you. Now I'm learning what happens in this little noggin of mind. There are many other ways, actually, to investigate the self. I was going to say there's no other way. But I love this way.
Yeah.
This way of just saying, okay, there's some value. The gem, there's another koan that talks about the wish-fulfilling jewel, which is a common trope also. Like there's something really precious, and it's somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But what we teach is it's right here. It's right here in your spinning noggin, that motion you made. That's exactly right. You don't have to be different than the way you are to wake up to this amazing life.
Yeah.
Thank you for naming it and articulating it so beautifully.
Thank you for the talk. Alan and Paul, I love the last two points. The one of leaving it for someone else. Mm. And as you comment on that, I just felt it was like this voice just reached out and right to me. Mm. You know? Okay. And it feels so personal, you know. And then the effort is fruitless. So reaching out to make your fruitless effort. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can't discover the fruitlessness mm-hmm. without the effort.
Mm-hmm.
And something about that fruitlessness is, it's like form is emptiness. You know, it's like there's I'm doing, and there's nothing to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really discover that without doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you spoke at the beginning about that feeling of intimacy, right, between you and the last speaker in the koan, it made me think of another koan collection editor, Wu Men, who says in The Gateless Gate that when we really engage with a koan, we can feel our eyebrows mingling with the eyebrows of an ancient teacher. And what a wonderful experience to have. This is another way of saying what Paul said. These teachers are alive. We know they're alive because here we are having this exchange.
Yeah, Francesca.
So I was earlier kind of saying to myself, God, your effort. I wouldn't say the word effort, but you know, I was aware that how much effort I put into things and how exhausting it is.
Mm.
And so I was kind of doing that while I was even walking and not wanting to follow up the steps and all that. And then I thought, you know, when I was a kid, we were graded on effort.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you got a C in math, but you got an A in effort, you weren't in trouble. So, I mean, I grew up that way. And so now in my head, oh, and then waking up at 5 a.m. is like a real shocker to me. And so I'm very, very tired. So I found myself falling asleep during the talk. But I wanted to hear it, so I was efforting to stay awake, and I kept nodding off and kept nodding off. And just after your talk, I was like, well, all that efforting was fruitless, because I didn't get to hear the talk. But on the other hand, it kind of makes me realize that what you said most about deeper down, like that's ingrained, you know, you've got to try, you've got to give it that effort. Instead of just, or even like with the Orioki, of course you want to, it would be nice to do it right. It's nice to, you want to have it right. So there's effort there, right?
Yeah.
But if you followed it up, you're saying, eh, it's fruitless, it's okay. Mm-hmm. If the effort to do the Orioki exactly right didn't come out right, that's fruitless, right?
Well, I would say that, you know, I mean, the effort is essential.
in this attachment to outcome, like you want this particular thing, like this is what it's going to be. I loved it today in Orioki. I learned a new way of drying my bowls.
Well, it was a secret
teaching. A secret teaching that I just had. Yeah. Yeah, and there's this aspect, and you know, we talk about it for those of us who work on koans. You know, when you quote pass a koan, you're given another koan. Or we can just take it just with our everyday practice. You know what follows this inhale? An exhale, and then an inhale, and then an exhale. And there is this aspect of, yeah, this effort, but really watch out for that kind of tendency of like, oh, it has to be this way. Because that's the very thing that keeps, you know, all of a sudden you realize that you haven't been breathing, you know. So, yeah.
And this is a really tender and delicate point that a number of people are bringing up, right? That I feel a weaving going on around, you know, I love Sashin because we're all sitting here not making eye contact, and then in the Dharma dialogue, and we get to hear this in Doksan, we're really one body dealing with similar stuff. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You can hear it, right, in the Dharma dialogue. If you haven't identified, if you think, oh, I'm not nothing like those people, well, that's another story that you're telling yourself, right? It's endless. But there's this thing about being good students that you're pointing to when we were kids. I just heard a psychologist talk about being good answerers, right? We were trained to be good at answering things. And that is not apparently psychologically healthy, and it doesn't work for Zen at all. Because he said, and I want to use Rich's beautiful story, if Rich had really practiced and practiced and practiced and got it down perfectly, the perfect Orioki, well, then you wouldn't learn anything. You would not be open to the richness of richness of not knowing. Really, like getting lost and then feeling shame come up. And it took me a couple of years, I think. And I'm a fast learner. That's one of my ego things. I think, oh, actually, that doesn't work when you get old. But I just was so frustrating, and I was so ashamed. And luckily, I always remember I went to a special priest training school that my teacher sent me to. I still am upset about it. I had this man, this teacher, a senior student, sitting next to me. And he just kept doing what we now encourage people to do, to just help, change a spoon, change the way the mat is, you know. I almost wept. I was also extremely sleep deprived, so you think getting up at 5 is something. It was so tender and loving. And this is what I think we need to develop internally. Like, I don't know how to do this stuff. I really don't. And so, okay then, I'm ready to learn. Wow, that is not the way we were brought up. And I'm looking around, I don't think any of us were brought up that way. We're A students, we did well, we're still here. It's amazing. So, yeah, so this sense of wonder, Francesca, like, I don't know what's going on. Okay.
I love that.
And also, I've fallen asleep to so many talks, you know, some more than others. I really have learned over the years that what I'm awake for is what's important. Like, I can miss the whole, I don't know how long this talk was, maybe a half an hour, but I was awake maybe for 2 minutes. What I heard then, that's all that matters. And if you needed to sleep during a teisha, what a great time to sleep. It's just so soothing and everybody's so lovely. Yeah. It can hurt your back of your neck, though.
I just want to point out that, oh, thank you for your talk, Alan. Well, wonderful. I wanted to point out my love for this and hate for this koan at the same time, because it points to me this broad way of seeing the world and life that I'm always so confined and I miss. I mean, in normal life, it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Here it's A, B, rhinoceros, snowshoes, astronaut. It's just, and it's just as legitimate. It's just as real. And I'm missing that all the time. But I have this practice that reminds me.
Well, that's just what Bix was pointing to,
so,
right?
Yeah.
And we could go further and say it's more legitimate and more real. Now you can go back to sleep.
We'll take Brad, and then we'll take, and then maybe the last one.
I'm stuck with the whoever it was in the koan that's just saying, well, let somebody else do it. I forgot the words. And that appeals to me a lot because I'm always the one that says, let me show you I can do it. There's a chorus line of the song from there, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball, that kind of thing. So it's a relief in a way. I guess it's probably not good to sort of bow out and just say, well, you know, or maybe it's good for me to do that. It's just to say, ah, oh, that's too much, you know. Let me just do my keen head and somebody else will get it.
Well, we have to be a little careful here not to make up a strategy. Right? Because you don't know how you're going to meet each situation. And so if you can have all the options available, know what it feels like to bow out, and also know what it feels like to say, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. Right? That's very related to being a good answerer. I'm the one who's going to do it, right? Do that thoroughly, right? Exhaust it. You don't have to, if we make up strategies in our head, then we get tangled up in knots. It's like what we were saying at the beginning about if you focus on the fruit, you miss the thing itself that's happening. So so be curious. Like, don't know. Sometimes I'm going to bow away, and sometimes I'm going to reach for the ball, and just let that be a continuous learning. This is what this human life is.
And what I hear you say, Brad, is that that part of the koan spoke to you especially because it may help you see one of your attachments, which is your attachment to being the one to do it. I'll do this. And, you know, every mistake we make in Orioki helps us become aware of our attachment to being right and being seen as being right and so on. And so, you know, in some ways, Sashin is an engine for us to make mistakes and then see what those mistakes reveal about where our attachments are. That's not the only reason we try to do things the same way. We do that partly to cohere as a sangha, as a single body, but it's a great add-on that it allows for, it forces so many errors, because each error is a dharma gate that we can go through, and this line in the koan was a dharma gate for you to go through.
Then the last day.
Thanks, Paulino, for the talk. I was really drawn to the line, it's broken. That one really, it kind of reminded me of when we do Om Nam, when we chant, it's this loud thing, and we're saying it's broken. And then there's this silence after that comes, where we receive and we listen. A question came up in my mind, like, what's it like when we're not broken? What's it like when all these constructions are strong? And then what's it like when they break down? And as you said, Paul, this invitation, it's almost an invitation to be broken, to start over, to come to Sashin for the first time. So I was moved by that line.
And this invitation is not just to come to Sashin for the first time. You know, this is an invitation, this is an ongoing invitation to our lives. You know, whether in this Sashin or in the Sashin that's outside that door. I think that's what the invitation is.
And it is. It's, you know, it's, you know, stumble, fall, keep rolling, keep, you know, this aspect of it. Yeah, yeah, this type of invitation.
And I know you know this, Dave, that the point isn't to find a place where we're not broken. Mm-hmm. The point is to find a place where our brokenness is the brokenness of the entire universe. Mm-hmm.